Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, September 10th, 2015. South Sudan's National Assembly overwhelmingly ratifies the IGAD-mediated peace deal President Kiir signed last month.
We are tasked to adopt this agreement. So do we adopt it?
And a new group calling itself South Sudan Armed Forces vows to fight on in South Sudan.
We the general, will break away from Riek Machar. We are not fighting in Afghanistan, state, fighting the government and fighting Riek Machar faction.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's National Assembly has ratified the compromise peace deal President Kiir signed at the end of last month. In a special session of Parliament, lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of the deal, making it the law of the land. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila Unango presented the IGAD brokered peace deal to the 212 lawmakers who attended today's extraordinary session of Parliament.
The Right Honourable Speaker, an honorable member of the National Legislature, allow me to present to you this agreement entitled Agreement on the Resolution of the Conflict in the Republic of South Sudan.
Unango acknowledged that under the terms of the agreement, Parliament should have ratified the deal 7 days after President Kiir signed it on August 26th. Unango says that means the agreement should have been presented to lawmakers for a vote on September 2nd. But he says,
I would like to make clear that we received this agreement officially on the 2nd of September. So if there is a 7 day starting, it will be starting from the 3rd of September going on.
The lawmakers who attended today's session of Parliament voted overwhelmingly to adopt the peace deal and make it law when Parliamentary Speaker Manasi Magok-Rundial put ratification to a vote.
This is a clear agreement. It should not take much of our time. We are tasked to adopt this agreement. So do we adopt it?
The agreement calls, among other things, for a ceasefire to take effect within 72 hours of the peace deal being signed by all parties, for a government of national unity to be formed by November, and for a permanent constitution to be drawn up for South Sudan. The deal also outlines security measures that will be in effect during the transitional period, including the demilitarization of Juba and three other towns. The two main sides in South Sudan's conflict, the government and the armed opposition led by former Vice President Riek Machar, have ordered their forces to lay down arms and respect a ceasefire, which officially took effect late last month. There are, however, reports of heavy fighting in parts of South Sudan, notably in the main oil-producing state Upper Nile. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
And an SPLM in opposition official says Machar's armed opposition group ratified the peace deal as well today at the rebel headquarters in the Upper Nile town of Pagak. Ezekiel Lol Gatkoth says the SPLM in opposition will fast-track implementation of the deal. Lol tells my colleague John Tanza that the rebels will not return to Juba until the capital is demilitarized.
We have transformed ourselves from the SPLM Leadership Council to the SPLM National Liberation Council. The meeting was chaired by the chairman of the SPLM and commander-in-chief of the SPLA, Dr. Riek Machar Teng. And we have unanimously, the whole leadership unanimously, ratified and adopted the peace agreement, which was signed by the chairman of the SPLM and commander-in-chief of the SPLA on the 17th, and also signed again by President Salva Kiir on the 26th of August. So now the whole leadership has unanimously adopted and ratified the agreement.
There is also another Liberation Council in Juba. Now, what is going to be the difference between your council and the other SPLM Liberation Council? This sounds a little bit confusing.
According to the agreement will be adopted and ratified by the SPLA National Liberation Council on our side. And on the government side, it is going to be the Parliament of South Sudan, which will be ratifying and adopting the agreement.
And what is next after adopting and ratifying the agreement?
Tomorrow we are going to dispatch a security team because they have this permanent ceasefire and security arrangement workshop in Addis Ababa starting on the 12th. So we are sending our team, 15 members team. They will be in Addis Ababa tomorrow, so they will start the workshop. And this workshop is very important for us because you will be working to identify the areas of your troops, areas of cantonment, forces that will be going to Juba, forces that will be going to all the areas in South Sudan, Juba, Bor, Malakal, Wau, Bentiu, and all those places which will be demilitarized. So now we are moving to the implementation stage of the agreement, and all the members of the leadership will start working on the transitional processes. Committees will be set up by the chairman of the SPLM and commander-in-chief, Dr. Machar, to make sure that people will be working day and night to operationalize the agreement and start implementing it.
And is there any reasons for ratifying this agreement very late? Because you are supposed to ratify it 7 days after its signature.
It is because of the logistical reason we got together very late, because the IGAD plus countries and the IGAD countries did not avail the resources quickly so that we can move. But finally, they have financed it, and we are all assembled in Pagak, the military leadership of the SPLM, SPLA, the governors, the leadership council, the member of parliament, those who are in Juba. All of us, we have been transported, and we are in Pagak now, and we have all ratified and adopted the agreement. The reason was because the logistics was not availed quickly, and I am appealing also to the world to make sure that resources are available so that we start working on the implementation process of the agreement.
That's the SPLM in opposition's Ezekiel Lol Gatkolf speaking to John Tanza via satellite phone earlier today from Pagak, where there has been the headquarters for the rebels in opposition. But not everyone is abiding by the peace deal. A group of military commanders who split from Machar's rebel group last month says they do not recognize President Kiir or Machar as the legitimate leaders of the country. One of the heads of the breakaway group, Gathoth Gatkwath, says his forces are fighting for control of Malakal town. That directly contradicts language in the peace agreement.
The forces we are fighting in Upper United States are South Sudan armed forces, fighting both the government and Riek Machar. So we are saying that the peace does not address the root causes of the conflict, especially the issue of the Nuer genocide. So it is we, the general who break away from Riek Machar, who are not fighting in Upper United States, fighting the government and fighting Riek Machar faction.
Ordinary South Sudanese will say you're fighting because Riek Machar fired you from his ranks.
That's not the issue. We are fighting because Riek Machar does not justify it. He is looking only for his position. So we are saying that the agreement should be comprehensive. Number two, the agreement should address the root causes of the conflict, especially the Nuer genocide. So the Nuer genocide is not addressed in the agreement. Now Riek Machar is only signing an agreement for his own interest.
You're sounding a little bit tribalistic. It was not only the Nuer who died in Juba. Am I correct?
No. Then you are wrong. And then you don't know the root cause of the problem. The problem was the killing of the Nuer on December 16, 17, 18 in Juba. This is what caused the war. When Riek Machar was dismissed by Central Kiir, the Nuer did not fought. What brought us into fought is a genocide.
It sounds like you have a tribal cause that you would like to achieve.
You see, the war in the first place was actually, the Nuer was forced on tribal war by the government, because the government has actually killed one ethnic group within the system, targeted them, they were killed. This is what reacted many Nuers. But Riek Machar, he should not hijack the problem of Nuer into become the SPLM thing.
The African Union Commission of Inquiry report is very comprehensive about what happened in South Sudan December 2013, and it talks about...
It's not comprehensive. We are not satisfied.
So what do you want? What do you?
The president who actually killed us, the president who killed his own nation, should not become the president of the transitional government of national unity.
And how would you want to resolve this problem?
The president who killed himself, he become the president again, and he killed his own people.
How would you want to solve...
We are saying also, Riek Machar has corrupted. He did not put the SLM in order. We are also saying, Riek Machar also should not be part of the government of national unity because he did not put the SLM in order.
And who would you like to be part of the government of national unity?
Yeah, I think it is good. This is a good question. It is actually up to the SLM. It was up to the SLM or the people of the SLM in opposition and the people of the people in the government side to sit and bring a neutral president, a president who is not part and parcel of the conflict. Riek Machar and Al-Fakir were part and parcel of the problem, who brought the crisis.
And who is that neutral person?
I cannot give you a definite name now, but need all people of South Sudan to sit and bring the person.
You were telling me that you want the government to account for the killing of your tribesmen in Juba. And again, now you are changing that. You want the people of South Sudan to choose their leader. I mean, I don't see consistency here.
Yeah, but you see, who are people fighting now? It is we. It is we who fight in national mobilization. We have the right to choose our own nominee to become a vice president. He is not even asking himself to nominate himself.
That is Gathoth Gatkwoth, one of the military commanders in a group that broke away from Machar's Espelemin opposition last month after Machar fired those commanders. He was speaking with John Tanza earlier today. There's been another reshuffling, this time in central Equatoria. The state's recently appointed caretaker governor, Juma Ali Malu, announced some state ministers will take on other posts while other officials have been fired. Among those who lost their jobs are Deputy Governor Manasa Lomole Waya and the commissioners of Yei, Tarakeka, Morobo, and Lenya counties. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
Central Equatoria's Cabinet Affairs Minister, Hastin Yokwe, says caretaker Governor Malo announced the changes in a decree issued last night.
He reshuffled out the former deputy governor. He reshuffled out the Minister for Information. He reshuffled out also the Minister for Gender and Social Welfare. Following these changes, then he made appointments. And the former Minister of Information, Honorable Suba Samuel, became the Deputy Governor. And we have a Member of Parliament called Honorable Emmanuel Adil. He has become the Minister for Information. And the post of the Ministry of Gender and Social Welfare has not yet been filled.
Yokwe says several county commissioners were sacked while a few held on to their jobs.
The Commissioner of Juba, Honorable Stephen Wani, has been retained. Also, the Commissioner of Kayukeji is retained. So two commissioners are retained. But the four commissioners of Tarakeka, Lanya, Yei, and Morobo have been changed.
Notable among the reshufflings is former Gender and Social Welfare Minister Mary Apai, who is now Morobo County Commissioner. Yokwe says he does not know if more changes are coming, but he says he believes Malo will soon appoint a new Minister of Gender and Social Welfare. He says the new county commissioners are likely to be sworn in tomorrow, while the newly appointed ministers must be vetted by Parliament as required by the Constitution.
Parliament at the moment is in recess, and His Excellency the Governor will request the Honorable Speaker of the State Legislative Assembly to call an urgent session of the Parliament to come and vet the newly appointed ministers. That will be the legal procedure. After the vetting, then those who will go through, or if all of them go through, then they will be sworn in.
Yokwe says the acting governor did not offer an explanation for the changes, but calls it a routine change, as new leaders, in his words, reconstitute the teams they find in office to suit their context. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A malnutrition program is launched in Awil to address the hundreds of thousands of children going hungry in South Sudan. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you have a best friend? What is he or she like?
I have right now. He's a boy and he likes music. He wants songs. Yeah, we share that.
My best friend would be my mom, so I don't really deal with best friends. My best friend is my mom.
Yeah, I don't trust anyone, so I don't have a best friend because I don't trust anyone.
I have one. We became friends when we were at university. She's very good for me because she's always there for me, especially when I'm stuck in terms of financial terms. She's very close and she helps me so much.
I have a best friend. That best friend, she wants to play football, netball very much.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. UNICEF, the World Food Program, and other aid agencies have launched a program in Awil to treat up to 250,000 children suffering from malnutrition across the country. Abraham Agoth has this report from the Northern Bahar al-Ghazal State Capital.
Ambassadors from the U.S., Japan, Netherlands, Germany, Norway, and all who made donations to UNICEF and WFP for the program attended the event in Awil. UNICEF country representative Jonathan Beach told reporters at a nutrition site in Madwai that the number of malnutrition cases in northern Barakizal, Warab, and Unity states is alarming.
We've come here with a lot of donors and partners. Five ambassadors have joined us on the trip to look at the situation of malnutrition in northern Barakizal, because this is one of the high burden states in the country where there's a lot of children with severe acute malnutrition.
Vich says it is particularly difficult to reach malnutrition children in areas where fighting has been heavy, such as oil-producing Unity State.
It's extremely difficult in the three conflict-affected states because there's very limited access. And we don't know what the situation is in many parts of Unity, for example, where they've been displaced several times, and we don't know what condition they're in. So we really need to get in, and as you see, have skilled, trained health workers and social mobilizers getting into the communities so that these children can be treated.
Here in northern Barakizal, 20 new nutrition centers are being opened for malnourished children. At Madwain Center, health worker Luke Lual describes the admitting process.
We are admitting children from 6 months to 59 months. And those are the children with a MAWAG less than 12.5. Usually admit them without medical consultation.
World Food Program Country Director Joyce Kamanyangwa says WFP and UNICEF will work closely together to treat the thousands of severely malnourished children in northern Barakizal.
Northern Barakizal has very, very high rates of malnutrition, above 15%, above the emergency thresholds. And it's not just the war that is causing malnutrition. You know, there are many causes, you know, lack of food, poor water sanitation, lack of care, lack of education. And so the need for us, and that's why, you know, between UNICEF and WFP, we're coming together to ensure that we have a much comprehensive approach in addressing malnutrition.
NGO Concerned Worldwide Nutrition Officer Yombiar urges community to seek immediate medical attention if their children show signs of malnutrition.
When the child gets treated before they get worse, so there is a chance whereby the child can recover the growth and the mental development. This is one of the aspects, an important thing. And if the treatment is not being followed, I think malnutrition can take the child to the extent whereby the child cannot grow old, and is likely also to get sick in any time, an infection, because the immune become weak.
Nutrition officer John Servio, who works for the implementing agency Concerned Worldwide, agrees that it is extremely important to be able to treat malnourished children in the early stages.
We encourage the community to bring in their children at least to receive the treatment for especially those who will be found to be malnourished, because in the RUTF, the plant peanut they are seeing is not just food. It contains all the food values and some medicine which will help. Because children who are malnourished, even adults, their immune system is low.
Yesterday, Northern Barakazal residents, civil society activists and police and fire officials marched from Sheikh Hadid to Freedom Square singing songs about eradicating malnutrition among children. UNICEF says tens of thousands of children under the age of 5 remain at risk of malnutrition-related death in South Sudan, not only because of the 20-month-long conflict, but because of high rates of diseases, lack of access to basic health care, and lack of clean drinking water. Malnutrition, especially among young children, is not mirroring improvements in food security because of high rates of diseases, lack of safe water, and lack of access to basic health care. For VOA News, I'm Abraham Goth reporting in Awil.
Stocks of one of the most effective snake bite antivenoms in the world will run out next year, putting thousands of lives at risk. That's the warning that international medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, made early this week. MSF says losing access to the highly effective Favafric antivenom will hit sub-Saharan Africa especially hard, as Ian Bior reports for VOA.
Favafric, which is produced by French pharmaceutical company Sanofi Pasteur, is the only antivenom that is effective against bites from many different types of snake, MSF says. The medical charity's advisor for neglected tropical diseases, Gabriel Alcoba, says that makes Favafric unique among antivenoms.
It covers 10 species of snakes, and in fact, it neutralizes the venoms of many snakes, and you can put them in the families of cobras, mambas, and vipers. And most vipers do either cytotoxic or hemorrhagic damage. That means tissue destruction or bleeding.
Alcoba says the international community has known for years that stocks of Favafric will run out in June next year. Sanofi announced in 2010 that it would stop making Favafric because other pharmaceutical companies were producing cheaper alternatives, which are not as effective as Sanofi's antivenom. Sanofi halted production of Favafric last year. Alcoba says when stockpiles of the popular antivenom run out, thousands of lives will be at risk.
We are really facing a high number of victims. Well, before it was a neglected tropical problem, now it's a neglected tropical problem with many victims. And we really think that we will face more because we are discovering that there are many victims in remote areas like in South Sudan, Central African Republic, where we work.
Sanofi is said to be sharing the recipe for its effective antivenom with another company. But MSF says there will likely be no alternative snakebite treatment to Favafric for at least 2 years. That's because producing a reliable and broadly effective treatment like Favafric is complex and expensive, Alcoba says.
When the product costs more than $100, it costs the full treatment costs easily between $250 and $500. So you can imagine it's very difficult already to get it into the field and to have it in the right place at the right moment for the right patients.
Around 5 million people are bitten by snakes every year. 100,000 snake bite victims die. A third of those deaths occur in sub-Saharan Africa. Around 500,000 others have to have limbs amputated or are permanently disabled after being bitten by snake. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Cameroon's government says it has dispersed $12 million to calm angry soldiers protesting the non-payment of their dues for serving as international peacekeepers in the Central African Republic. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story for VOA from Yaoundé.
At least 200 soldiers blocked traffic on some streets in the capital Yaoundé Wednesday before moving to the National Assembly and the Defense Headquarters. They demanded that all money owed them for their service in the CAR be paid. Cameroon's Minister of Communication, Issa Chiruma, says Cameroon had paid all the salaries of the soldiers and what is remaining are allowances the African Union has yet to pay.
the minister delegate at the presidency in charge of defense, went to the headquarters of the African Union in Addis Ababa to clarify this very serious issue with the Peace and Security Commission of the African Union. Assurances were then given that all measures were taken to finalize the procedure for the full payment of these arrears.
In the meantime, Chiruma says Cameroon President Paul Biya has ordered that $12 million be withdrawn from the public treasury to pay the soldiers' dues. Chiruma asked the soldiers to return to their barracks. Cameroon has deployed 1,300 troops to the CAR since 2014 as part of a UN peacekeeping mission to calm sectarian violence that began in 2013. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's news. South Sudan's lawmakers overwhelmingly approved the IGAD-mediated peace deal President Kiir signed last month, ending the country's 20-month-long conflict. The 212 members of parliament approved it by voice vote, making it the deal the law of the land. Justice Minister Paulino Wanawilo Unango acknowledged that under the terms of the deal, parliament should have ratified it 7 days after President Kiir signed the agreement on August 26th. He says that means the deal should have been presented to lawmakers for a vote on September 2nd. He says Parliament received it on the 2nd and needed more time to deliberate. The agreement calls for a ceasefire to take effect within 72 hours of the peace deal being signed by both parties, for a government of national unity to be formed by November, and for a permanent constitution to be drawn up for South Sudan. The SPLM in opposition also ratified the deal today. An opposition official, Ezekiel Lowell-Gatkoth, says the SPLM in opposition will form committees to implement the deal. He says former Vice President Riek Machar's top leadership will operate from the town of Bagak in Upper Nile State until Juba is demilitarized. Not everyone is in agreement with the new peace deal. A group that split from Riek Machar's leadership have formed their own armed group. One of them, Gathoth Gatkoth, says the group is fighting for control of Malakal Town, an Upper Nile Unity State. He says that they don't recognize President Kiir or Machar as legitimate leaders of the country, and they vow to fight on, which contradicts the ceasefire that is spelled out in the peace agreement. And finally, UNICEF, the World Food Program, and other aid agencies have launched a program in Awil to treat up to 250,000 children suffering from malnutrition across South Sudan. Ambassadors from the U.S., Japan, the Netherlands, Germany, and Norway, all of whom donated to the program, were in attendance. UNICEF County Representative Jonathan Vetch says the number of malnutrition cases in northern Bahar al-Ghazal, Warup, and Unity states is alarming. And that's a look at today's top stories, and that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Sura Yako by Sauti Sol. We've been listening to Sauti Sol with the song Sura Yako. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.